You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Critics tend to like the Mint Theater Company's productions, which resurrect older plays that have become lost. But the reviewers have been particularly effusive about its latest offering, N.C. Hunter's 1953 drama, A Day by the Sea. The New York Times' Neil Genslinger raved, "There's so much to like that it's hard to know what to single out. A beautiful study in conversations never had or had too late." It's my great pleasure to welcome back to our show its director, Austin Pendleton, and its producing artistic director, Jonathan Bank. And they're joined today by Jill Tanner, who stars as Laura Anson. Thank you so much for being on our show.
Thanks for having us.
Jonathan, did you ever think when you took over the Mint 20 years ago or so that you're going to get these kinds of reviews?
I certainly did not. 20 plus years ago, I thought that we'd be done in a couple of years and I'd be waiting tables or something.
That you would have pretty much exhausted all of the repertoire?
I never thought that. I knew that there was a boundless, endless supply of plays, but it's been a wonderfully gratifying fact that we found an audience.
When you're looking for a play that deserves to be revived, does it matter or help if it was something by someone famous like Ernest Hemingway, or do you almost prefer if it was by someone like N.C. Hunter, who was famous in his day but has been largely forgotten?
In the first years of the Mint, it was great to have a playwright who was known, although what we often did, Hemingway, known for something else, A.A. Milne, known for something else, Tolstoy, known for something else. That was interesting, but now I like the challenge of finding complete obscurities.
And where do you look for them?
The library.
Ah, the library.
Yes.
You must read hundreds of plays a year.
People think that, but I do a lot of research before I start reading, and you usually have a fair idea of whether you're going to be running into quality or not.
Austin, as a triple threat, since you're an actor and playwright as well as director, what was your attraction to A Day by the Sea?
Jonathan gave it to me to read, and I read it, and I was very moved by reading it.
And a reviewer once called Hunter an English Chekhov. Do you see that?
Well, kind of, except he writes about English people. And English people are different from Russian people. So the whole texture of it is different. But in terms of structure, I guess, a little bit, it's a lot of conversations, as Neil said in the Times, and it's about regrets, and regrets on stage, as Chekhov certainly proved, can be incredibly dynamic.
Uncle Vanya could have been renamed Regrets.
Regrets with a gun attached, But here we don't have any guns in A Day by the Sea.
Had you heard about Hunter before?
I'd heard the title of this play when I was a kid, when I guess Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy did it on Broadway. I knew there was a play called this, but much more to the point, 2 years ago I saw, was it called A Picture of Autumn?
Yes.
Also by N.C. Hunter at the Mint, and I loved that. And I told Jonathan I loved it. I loved the production. I loved the play, and Jill was in that, too.
I was, yeah.
Yeah, and was directed by Gus Kaikkonen, and I thought it was extraordinary. So I mentioned that to Jonathan, and then he says, well, why don't you read A Day by the Sea?
Jill, as we've said, this is about things that are said or unsaid. Does that offer special problems for an actor? The things that are unsaid that we still have to understand?
Yes, it does.
Are not being said?
It is challenging. But at the same time, it's wonderful to have the dialogue that we have in this play, because it's so rich and it's so language-driven. It's just a pleasure, a real pleasure to work on such a play. And it's seldom that you get a three-act, beautifully written play.
And it didn't hurt that your part is of somebody who's a force of nature.
She is a force of nature, and she's feisty and fiercely loyal, and I would imagine rather a tough mother, but she's a good mother, and she adores her son. She is very, very loyal to her son. You know, the other day I was coming out of the theater and someone came up to me and said, "You're a dreadful mother." And I thought, how odd. I don't see her that way at all.
But that's the kind of writing it is. It's that rich writing where different people can see the same character in different ways.
Yes.
That's a sign of really good playwriting.
Because of the subtleties.
Yes.
Because it's like a person in life. Certain people in life, no, everyone in life has people who think one way about them and other people think another way about them.
It's very interesting because, you know, each night the audience are with a certain character and it varies. And you can really feel it.
Like from early on.
Yeah, from early on. Yes. Either they're with George or they're with me or they're with Francis.
You actually feel the energy of the audience?
Oh, very much so. Very much so. From the moment you go out there, and they vary tremendously.
Does it help that you're in this new theater that is so magnificent?
It is a lovely theater to work in, yeah. I miss the Mint, but it's a beautiful theater to work in. It's very nice.
I think it's especially true in an intimate theater like the Beckett at Theater Row, but you can always feel the audience, right? Even in a big house, they have a personality of their own.
And what is so extraordinary with this is that you can hear a pin drop every night. The audience are absolutely wrapped up with the plot of the play.
Mm-hmm. Although we never see the house by the sea, it has a presence that is full of the past, and your character, Laura Anson, is intent on keeping that alive.
Well, she has to, because she has a lot of people who rely on her for their existence. And it is after two world wars, and it's 1953. So she has a lot on her plate.
Does this play have a plot, or is it basically just about what happens when a group of people are brought together again? And how even intransigent people can change.
Well, that's a plot right there. That is the plot.
But that's why it's been described as Chekhovian.
Yeah.
That's right. That's exactly right. Mm-hmm.
It revolves around the meeting of a man and a woman who grew up together who are not siblings.
Didn't the original production star John Gielgud and Ralph Richardson?
And Sybil Thorndike and Irene Wirth and Lewis Casson.
Oh, my.
Yes.
And it ran almost a year.
And Austin Gielgud, I understand, doubled as a director.
Yes.
That must have been amazing. Who starred in it when it came to New York? Did any of them come over with it?
Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy.
Oh, not bad.
Not bad. Yeah, but it only ran 2 weeks in New York.
Yeah.
It did not. It was in 1955, and it just didn't connect for whatever reason in the way it is connecting now. And
you know, Tandy Cronin came to see it, their daughter.
Yes.
And I said, well, did you see the original? And she said, no, I was not allowed to see it.
I called Tandy, who has done a show at the Mint, when we started our preparations, and asked if she had any stories for me. All she remembered was that it was very short-lived.
My guests are Jonathan Banks, the producing artistic director of the Mint Theater Company, Austin Pendleton, who in this case is acting as the director of N.C. Hunter's play, A Day by the Sea, and Jill Tanner, who stars as Laura Anson in it. It has been extended through October 23rd at the Beckett Theater on Theater Row at 410 West 42nd Street. And if you want ticket information, you go to our show page at WNYC.org. Hunter died in 1971. What was his career like?
He had a few shows in the 50s that were very successful. And he had a number of plays in before the 50s that went nowhere. And in the 60s, he had a couple plays that went nowhere.
Jill, as we mentioned earlier, you were in a production of another N.C. Hunter play 3 years ago,
Yes.
A Picture of Autumn. How does it compare? Is it similar in feeling?
It's similar, but A Picture of Autumn was far more plot-driven.
Than
this. This is more Chekhovian in its feel. Mm-hmm. It really is A Day by the Sea.
And like Chekhov, it has a lot of drama in it, but it has to be played as comedy?
It doesn't have to be played as comedy.
Well, I always feel Chekhov has to be played as comedy.
I agree. But it's a very funny play. I mean, it has moments, but again, that it's character driven.
It really offers the audience an option of how to respond to it. Sometimes they get delirious and giddy with laughter. I mean, it just looks like a brush fire of giggling laughter goes on for sometimes 15 minutes at a time. Other times you go from the opening curtain to the final curtain without almost any laughs. And the audience gets to pick what they want to do.
Yes.
Which is very generous of the play.
If someone asked you, Austin, what you do for a living, what would you answer? Writer, director, actor?
I don't know that I would say any of those things. I don't have any plan. I do what jobs I'm offered, you know what I mean?
Do you think that being an actor affects how you direct other actors?
Probably, yeah.
Well, you must have certain thoughts about how you like to be directed.
Oh, every actor has thoughts how they want to be directed, but it always doesn't coincide with the most effectively the way they're directed. You have to direct different actors in different ways, even in the same production. That's something I learned.
You have earlier. To learn about their personalities.
Let everybody work the way they want to work, and then that paradoxically turns them more into an ensemble than if you insist they all work the same way.
Austin's a very generous director. I mean, he does allow you to do, what you want to do, and then he'll pull back or encourage it. But he's a very, very generous director.
You have a very funny scene where you're prodding your son, Julian, who's a frustrated diplomat, played wonderfully by Julian Elfer, to be doing exactly what he doesn't want to do. And in scenes like that, timing is really important. Is that something that is difficult to work out?
Well, you can't work it out because the audience teach you how to do it each night, each night it varies.
Yeah.
So, and if you depend on a laugh, you're constantly disappointed.
That's right.
Well, Austin, Terry Teachout mentioned in his rave review in the Wall Street Journal that you know how to, I'm quoting, winkle out the laughs and let the pathos take care of itself.
Well.
If Terry says so, nice. It must be true, right?
However it strikes people. You know, I don't go in and say, today I'm going to winkle out the laughs. But there's something to that. Another way of putting that is the humor helps the audience to be wide open for the pathos. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially in something
so that's
as
very
subtle as this.
Of where Terry Teachout. I mean, yeah.
Jonathan, getting back to the theater.
Oh, wait. Oh. So what that means is that you direct toward the humorous point of view of a scene. The playwright has a sense of humor about the way people behave. That doesn't mean the audience has to laugh, but they see the humor of it. When they see the humor, they see the humor in their own behavior in life, and then that leaves them wide open to be moved by the pathos that is in the story.
Well, humor doesn't have to be jokes.
Exactly.
Although sitcom writers don't understand that.
Right.
Exactly.
Well, that because it's a sitcom is a different thing.
How do you like the new theater? It's quite different from the old place on 43rd Street.
What I have discovered over the last year, this is our second new theater, and all that really matters is the play. Taking care of the play, everything else is really secondary.
But you also do other things there. You have readings of works by playwrights periodically.
Yes. Yes. Each space has different challenges, but challenges are always interesting. So I have no complaints.
And in this case, this play has been extended through October 23rd.
And that took some
doing.
Are
you limited as to how far you can extend
the
production?
Well, in order to extend it all, we need the cooperation of a number of people because the booking is done, you know, end to end, and so it took a lot of good luck and some winkling.
And you have to get, and you have your actors have to be
free.
Yes,
most of us are free. So.
Jill, in your case, you studied at the Royal Academy.
I did.
Is it very different from an American acting school?
Well, this was in 1960, so yes, I'd say it was very different. Very different. It was a lot of voice work, a lot of movement work, a lot of technical classes. It was a very, very good education at that time. Mm-hmm. What it was like over here, I don't know. I've never studied in America.
We can ask Austin in just a moment.
We can, because he's a teacher.
The voice work probably helped a bit, because you've recorded over 100 books on tape for the Library of Congress and recorded books.
I have, and I love doing that. I'm very lucky to have that as a second bow.
Austin, do you still teach at HB
yes,
Studio?
Yeah. It's the one consistent job I've had.
And but you've written some wonderful plays like Orson Shadow. Are you working on another?
Yes.
not going to tell us more.
I don't, yeah.
You're also the subject of a documentary called Starring Austin Pendleton, which recently had its world premiere at the Tribeca Film Festival.
That's right.
Does it feel weird to see what somebody else thinks about you?
Yes. No, I shouldn't be like that about it. It's actually a two-hour movie, and they reduced it to a 20-minute movie. I didn't see it at all, or even any fragment of it, until I saw the movie at the Tribeca Film, because I thought my input would be hopelessly corrupt. You know what I mean? And it's a very interesting movie. The most interesting thing in it is the actors they interview, who talk about just being an actor in the profession. And you get wonderful insights and ruminations from people like Bob Balaban, Phil Hoffman, and Wally Shawn, and Meryl Streep, and Olympia Dukakis. Just about, they talk about me, but they also talk about a life of navigating this profession. And that, to me, is the most extraordinary thing about the movie, to hear all those people talk about that.
A number of those people wear a couple of hats.
Yeah.
As well,
yes,
Bob Balaban,
yes,
and Wally Shawn.
He's a triple threat, yeah.
Now, just one more thing. Yeah. A listener called in, Jonathan, to ask if the Mint will be doing any more Edward Wilson plays or more plays about baseball.
I don't know of any plays about baseball. I'm stumped.
But what about Edward Wilson?
Well, what stumps me there is more plays, because we haven't done any.
Oh.
And now I have to go to the library.
Oh, yeah.
Look for me in the W section.
This could be the verge of something momentous.
But what's coming up after this?
Right.
Speaking of triple threats, our next play is written by Miles Mallison, who had a thriving career as an actor. Kind Hearts and Coronets and a handful of other films. He wrote The Thief of Baghdad. And this is a play called Yours Unfaithfully, written and published in 1933 and never produced. So we'll be doing the world premiere.
Wow.
I look forward to that.
That's great.
And maybe we'll be talking about that. And Austin won't be directing.
No, I'm directing that one, in fact.
Good.
Well, Jonathan Banks, thank you so much for coming here. Austin Pendleton, Jill Tanner. The play that we have been discussing, A Day by the Sea, is currently at the Beckett Theater on Theater Row at 410 West 42nd Street, and it has been extended until October 23rd. For ticket information, go to our show page at wmyc.org/lopate.